Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the fourth podcast that I've recorded, and I'm recording it in August of 2008. The title of the podcast is, I'd be the growlingest bear on the internet if only I were a bear. I want to start by talking about the two blurbs that appear on the back cover of a book entitled Irrational Exuberance by Yale professor Robert Shiller. This book is arguably the most important book on investing ever written. There are other fine books on investing. Stocks for the Long Run was an excellent book. A Random Walk Down Wall Street was an excellent book. Security Analysis was an excellent book. But my candidate for the most important book on investing ever written is Irrational Exuberance by Robert Shiller. And the reason I say that is that stock returns are determined by two things, two very, very different things. They are determined in part by the productivity of the U.S. economy when you are buying a broad index fund, or the profitability of individual corporations when you buy individual stocks. A big part of what determines the return you obtain on your stock investment is what sort of profits were generated by the underlying business enterprises. And that's the rational side of stock investing, and the rational side can be examined through the use of numbers and charts and tables and logic and all sorts of things of that nature. 90% of what you see in the literature on investing focuses on that aspect of the stock investing project. But the other factor that affects investment returns is a factor that is very rarely explored in depth. You often see references to it, but rarely does anyone go in depth and really come to terms with this second factor. And the factor is human emotion. Because stocks are traded amongst people, what people think of stocks determines what sort of return you obtain from them. So that's why we see these wild price swings. If all that stock investing were sharing in the profits of corporate enterprises, the stock market would increase by roughly 6.5% real per year, because you can go back a long ways in U.S. history and you will see that over that entire time period, all the way back to 1870, that 6.5% real number has more or less held. There have been time periods when the return was less than that, and there have been time periods when the return was more than that. But it always returns to something in that neighborhood. And in all likelihood, that's going to continue to be the case in days to come. So if that's all that stock investing were, understanding stock investing would be incredibly easy. You would just see prices go up by roughly 6.5% real per year, and you would decide if that's a return you liked or didn't. And most of us would find that return very exciting indeed. and that would be the end of the story. But of course it's not. What we see in the real world is there are some years when stock prices go up by 6.5% real, but that's the exception. What you often get are stock prices going up by 20% or 30% in some years, and then going down by 50% in other years. We get these wild, wild price swings that defy logic and that defy the economic realities. And that's what makes it hard to understand stock investing. I talk with lots of middle-class investors in the work I do, mostly on discussion boards. That's the medium I work on. And what you find when you talk to people is almost everyone today is invested in stocks to some extent. We feel that we have to be if we're going to provide for our retirements, because there's no other asset class that provides returns strong enough to finance our retirement by the time we turn 65. So we're all invested in stocks, but most of us don't feel that we really understand where stock returns come from. And we sort of go along with the flow. We hear that everyone's invested in stocks, so we're invested too. But when times of trouble come along, and we're living through times of trouble in the stock market today, when times of trouble come along, we get nervous, we get anxious, because we don't really know where the money's coming from and whether it's going to continue or what's going to happen to our money. And I think it's very sad, and it's very unfortunate, and it's very unnecessary. Stock investing is not nearly as complicated as people make it out to be. But there's a tiny bit of complication that you do need to accept and you do need to deal with. And the one thing that makes stock investing somewhat hard to understand is that it is not one thing. Some people will tell you, they'll focus on this rational side, and they'll just talk about the corporate profits and the economic realities. And that really is there. There's a half-truth in what they say, but they're not giving you the whole story. And then others will talk about the emotion and the crazy volatility, and they also are not telling the full story, because the economic realities are also a big part of it. The only way to understand stock investing is to integrate understandings of these two very different phenomenon. One, a very rational phenomenon, and one, a highly irrational phenomenon. You've got to mix the two, and then you've got a stock market. You've got a market that assigns prices to shares of businesses that are generating profits, all rational, but that assigns those profits not based just on what happened economically, but with another layer on it, this layer of crazy human emotion. So the price of the stock market often it bears very little connection with the fair value, with what the price would be if it were given a fair value. Sometimes prices are wildly off the mark. Now, there are people you can talk to who will tell you otherwise. There are people who will say the market price is the best price you can come up with. That's the most rational price. Nothing could be farther from the truth. I run into these people all the time, and sometimes they make statements that are so dogmatic, and they state them with such force that I think they're putting me on. I really do. I sometimes think they're putting me on. But I've come to the conclusion that for the most part, they're not. Sometimes they no doubt are putting me on. But if you ask questions, they can't deal with it. They freak out. They're insecure. They're defensive. And that indicates not that they're putting me on or that they're putting you on. It indicates that they're putting themselves on. They've come to believe that market prices are rational because it scares them to think that market prices are not rational. It scares them to face the realities. And so they come up with these theories. The theory, the famous one, is the efficient market theory. And I'll talk about that in more depth in a future podcast, but the efficient market theory is crazy talk. It's a hugely popular theory, hugely successful theory, that makes no sense. It does not describe reality. It assumes that all investors are rational actors. And then everything the theory says follows from that. And everything that the theory says follows does indeed logically follow. They get the logic right. But what they get wrong is the premise. The premise that stock investors are rational actors. There has never been a stock market in which stock investors were rational actors. There never could be one. Because stock investors are humans. And humans are as much emotional creatures as they are rational creatures. We do have human reason. That's a reality. So what they're talking about is real. But it's not the only influence on how we make investing decisions. And when you ignore that other influence, you're ignoring a big part of the story. My view is that the emotional side of the story is probably 70% of the stock investing story. But you can make arguments that it's 70%. You can make arguments that it's only 50%. I have a hard time seeing how you can make an argument that it's less than 50%. If you look at the literature, 90% of the literature talks about the rational side and only 10% about this emotional side. So that's why I think Shiller's book is so valuable, because he goes into that emotional side in great depth, greater depth than I think anyone has ever done before. So I'm a big fan of the book, and most of my writing in this field is heavily influenced by Shiller. But I want to read two blurbs that the publisher of Shiller's book put on the back cover of the book. The first is from the Wall Street Journal, and the Wall Street Journal says that Shiller's book, Irrational Resilience, is a dose of realism that serious investors will ignore at their peril. Those are good words. That says it exactly right. Now, here's what Business Week says. Irrational Exuberance is a dazzling, richly textured, provocative book. All true. By far the most important book about the stock market since Jeremy Siegel's 1994 Stocks for the Long Run. Also, all true. Offering a cogent statement of the bear's view of events to come, Shiller is not merely a bear, he is a grizzly. I have some problems with that last part. Now, whoever wrote those words for Business Week was not trying to slam Robert Shiller. They obviously are saying something kind about the book, and the publisher used the quote on the back cover. So there clearly is no bad intent. But I have a problem with the idea of referring to Robert Shiller as a bear. And of course, people do this with me. Because I'm heavily influenced by Shiller, people refer to me as a bear, and I object to that characterization. I don't believe I am a bear. I don't think the characterization fits. So I want to describe why. And this affects your ability to succeed with your investments. You need to understand why people refer to certain writers as bears and how that affects the information you take in about stock investing and ultimately what decisions you make about your investments. First of all, they say that Shiller offers a cogent statement of the bear's view of events to come. I don't agree that he does that. I've read the book. I've read the book two times all the way through and a third time. A good number of sections of it. I don't agree that he does that. The book is 250 pages long. The first 15 pages is a sort of introduction. It's chapter one, but then at the end of chapter one comes part one. So chapter one is more or less in the nature of an introduction. And chapter one is called The Stock Market Level in Historical Perspective. And what Shiller does in that chapter is he points out, at the time this book was published in early 2000, stock prices were at the highest levels they had ever been in history by far. The highest level we had ever gone before that was in the months preceding the great crash of 1929, when stock prices ultimately fell by 89%. And in January of 2000, prices were far, far ahead, far, far higher than where they were in 1929. So prices were insanely out of control. And Shiller puts forward, based on the historical data, how stocks have always performed in the past, a claim that stocks are going to come down and are going to come down hard in the years that follow. So you could argue that those 15 pages do indeed give a statement of the bear's view of events to come, but that's only a tiny portion of this book. That's the opening statement. And the remaining 235 pages of text are not charting what bears think is going to happen. The remaining 235 pages try to describe how we got there. How did we get in this mess? And that's usually what I try to do in my writing. I'm usually trying to explain not so much what I think is going to happen in days to come. What's going to happen in days to come is obvious. It's a mathematical reality. People don't understand this, but Shiller understands it, and I understand it as a result of studying it for a number of years now. When prices are incredibly, insanely high, they must come down. The only other option is for the market to collapse, which none of us want. Then our money's not worth anything. So prices coming down is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It means that we'll be able to get up and fight another day. So it's not a bad thing. And that's why Shiller doesn't spend a lot of time writing about it. He states the essential realities up front, but the focus of all his efforts is explaining how we got in such a bad situation. And that's the proper focus. That's what we need to learn as investors so that we can stop doing that. Let's stop doing the things that cause stock crashes. Let's invest more rationally. That's what Shiller's all about. When they call him a bear, and when they call me a bear, what they are doing is they are distancing themselves from him. Think about this. They say that Shiller is a bear. When John Bogle, he's probably the leading name that's on the opposite side of the spectrum from Shiller. When John Bogle puts forward a speech or an article, do they describe him as a bull? A wild bull? Not merely a bull, but the most rampaging bull ever seen? They don't do that. He's an investing expert, or he's a commentator, or he's a fund owner, or he's St. Jack. He doesn't have to be described as a bull. John Bogle offers a lot of valuable insights. Good for him. Good for us. But he's one of us. He's part of the group. He's part of the team. He's a friend. When you say somebody is a bear, you are distancing yourself. Think of that old television commercial for Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch is bullish on America. What was being communicated in that commercial? What was being communicated is bulls are optimistic. Bulls are forward-looking. Bulls believe in the future. Bulls are like you. Bulls are the way you want to be as a person. And what are bears by implication? Bears are weirdos. Bears are pessimists. Bears dress funny. Bears smell funny. This sort of thing isn't said out loud, but it's implicit. And I experienced this personally. As I said, my medium is the internet discussion board. I post it on some internet discussion boards prior to the time when I ever wrote about investing. I used to write only about saving back at the time when I was writing my first book. And I was a hugely popular poster at the Motley Fool site, arguably the most popular poster at the site, to the point where it was almost getting annoying, because one of the things I benefit from when I post on discussion boards is I get a lot of feedback, both positive and negative. And the positive feedback, of course, feels good. The negative feedback helps you learn. It helps you improve, helps you sharpen your ideas. And I got to a point where I was so popular at that board that people would not say anything critical of me, you know. And I would say good morning, and people would be patting me on the back. So I wanted to see a little more criticism. But when I started writing about investing and I started reporting what the historical data says about the effect of valuations on long-term returns, I didn't just get negative feedback. I got hate mail, okay? And I'm not exaggerating. I won't go into all what happened, but I had people threatening to come to my house and kill my wife and children if I did not stop reporting what the historical data says about the effect of valuations on long-term returns. My point here is, there are group dynamics that apply on a discussion board. The community sort of sets the ground rules of what can be let in and what cannot be let in. And there's nothing in my personality, there's nothing in my way of interacting with others that has ever caused any problem, because so long as the subject was not investing, I was extremely popular. But turn the subject to investing, and I am hated, not by all. There are many who, during the time I've written about investing, have sent me very kind notes and have posted, you know, very, very kind, charitable things about what I said. But there are others who hate me, and they're not kidding around. Some of them might be kidding around some of the time, but there's too many of them, and it's too intense for it all to be kidding around. There are people who genuinely wake up in the morning feeling hate for me. I've had people who were friends of mine from the saving days, and I run into them on discussion boards, and I'll say, you know, when somebody else joins in the conversation, I'll say, well, so-and-so and I are friends from way back. And I've had them jump in and say, I'm not Rob's friend. I resent it that he refers to me as a friend. And I'm like, what? You know, I know we were friends. And what they're saying is, Rob disagrees with me on investing. Rob is a bear. I can't be friends with a bear. Well, if you can't be friends with someone because they are a bear, you have a problem. I'm not kidding. You have a problem. You're going to suffer financial losses as a result of that. And of course, people reading what you say are going to suffer financial losses. The dichotomy between bulls and bears is a very bad thing. It's a very bad thing. It does not even make sense in today's world. In today's world, most investors are trying to become long-term investors. Most investors today try to invest for the long term, quite properly so. In the long term, the term bull and bear makes no sense. What a bear is someone who thinks stock prices are going to go down over the next month or the next 3 months or the next 6 months or the next year. And a bull is someone who thinks the opposite. That's really what the phrase means. So you read all this stuff in the media about prices are going to do this, prices are going to do that. And I think all of it is junk. No one knows. No one knows. So they look at all these factors and they make all these arguments, and it's pretty much a waste of our time. But if you want to characterize people who say stock prices will go up in the short term as bulls, fine. And those who characterize it as saying prices will go down in the short term, fine. Do you know what my opinion is? I don't have one. I don't have an opinion on what stock prices are going to do in the short term. I don't have a clue. And I don't think Robert Shiller has a clue. Robert Shiller won't tell you where stock prices are going to go in the next 3 months. He will tell you where they're going to go in the next 10 years, and so will I, because stock prices are predictable 10 years out. Not entirely so, but to a large extent, stock prices are predictable 10 years out. Looking at the historical data and factoring in the valuation level that applies, we can tell you the most likely return in 10 years. We can tell you the range of possible returns, and we can assign probabilities to various points on the spectrum. And that's extremely valuable information. And there's nothing bullish about it or bearish about it. Yes, those numbers indicate that stock returns are going to be a lot less over the next 10 years than most investors of today realize. That's true. That's where they get this bearish stuff. We're not pessimistic. We're reporting a reality. We're reporting a statistical reality. This is what the historical data tells us. Stock returns are influenced by valuation levels, and we're at extremely high valuation levels today. And that means that we're likely in for a long period of low stock returns. And if you know that in advance, it helps you as a long-term investor, because if you know that, you can respond to it by lowering your stock allocation, which is the smart thing. And even if you don't lower your stock allocation, at least you can take that information to inform yourself so that when prices do go down, you won't be one of the ones panicking. There is no benefit whatsoever in keeping this information from people. If you keep this information from people, then they're going to be surprised when they see prices fall and fall hard. And they're going to panic. And they're going to sell their stocks at the worst possible time. So in an era when people are trying to become long-term investors, the dichotomy between bulls and bears makes no sense. It's an outdated dichotomy. In order to understand how stock investing works, you need to integrate the insights from people looking at different aspects of the investing project. We need the insights of people like Bogle, who is a giant in the field, and we need the insights of people like Shiller, who is also a giant in the field. We need to combine them so we can have one integrated, comprehensive understanding of how stock investing works in the real world. You can't do it by saying, we're going to have a little club. We're going to have a little click here, and we're not going to let the bears into the club. I've had people tell me this. I've had them say, Rob, we give you a lot of static when you show up here on our boards. Go to a bear board. Leave us alone. Well, I don't want to talk to other bears. I'm sure the bears, there are a lot of smart people that go, you know, allow themselves to be called bears, but I don't even think of myself as a bear. I think of myself as the bullest of bulls, because if you follow the advice that I offer, when prices go down, you're going to lose less money because you'll have a lower stock allocation, and that will allow you to buy more stocks when prices are low. So in the long run, my approach allows you to own more stocks. Well, who's the bull? The one that allows you to own more stocks or the one that allows you to own less stocks? I'm a true bull. But we need to even stop thinking in terms of bulls and bears. We need to think in terms of arguments that hold up and arguments that don't hold up. We need to think in terms of numbers that are accurate versus numbers that are not accurate. There's a fellow named Felix Salmon who writes the Market Movers blog. And he recently wrote a review of a calculator at my website, the Stock Return Predictor. And it was a very intelligent commentary. And I wrote about it at my blog. And I was very grateful to Felix for doing that. I think he helped us all out. But Felix had a comment that I just fastened on to. And I think this is my particular skill. This is what I bring to the table. I'm not one of these number whizzes. If you're looking for a statistical analysis, don't come to me. I work with a guy, John Walter Russell, who does the statistical work for the calculators at our websites. He's the numbers guy, not me. He won't let me near the numbers, and quite properly so. But Felix made a comment, which was not at all a numbers-related comment. One of the comments he made was, he had some reservations about the calculator, and he explained them, and that was fine. But he then made a comment. He said, but I am interested in this because I'm beginning to think that stocks in the future are not going to be the investment class they've been in the past. That's not a direct quote. That was the thought. And I thought that was a very interesting comment because a lot of people are coming to that sort of thought today. And it's not quite true. The reality is stocks are performing today exactly as they always have in the past. If you take a broad historical perspective, there's nothing at all surprising happening. But if you have been in the habit of thinking of people who cite the historical data as quote-unquote bears, people outside the club, then yes, stocks are in the future going to perform not at all as they always have in the past. You're going to be shocked and dismayed by how stocks perform. So it's a healthy thing if people like Felix are starting to see this. But it is unhealthy if we continue to go through these dramatic ups and dramatic downs, this, hyper bull psychology followed by hyper bear psychology. The bull psychology where we drive prices to unheard of insane levels, and then the bear psychology where we all sell all our stocks at the lowest possible prices and start over again. That's not the way to build a railroad. We need to start understanding that bear markets are just the flip coin of bull markets. Stocks have performed poorly for 9 years now because they performed so insanely well in the 1990s. That's all. And if we integrate the so-called bull insights with the so-called bear insights, we get to what's called reality. And that's a good place to be because reality is stable. When you understand how stock investing works in the real world, you don't panic when you see prices go down. You know what I see when I see prices go down? I see opportunities. Because when prices go down, my calculator will tell you the long-term return goes up. And if prices go down really, really, really hard, that means the long-term return is going up, 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 up. And that's how we all get rich investing in stocks. So let's stop this nonsense of forming clubs. We've achieved great insights in the discussions we've had in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities over the past 6 years. I want to see more of that. And those insights come from having people with different perspectives on stock investing all in the same room together, all sharing their insights, all sharpening the insights of the others and critiquing the flaws and building on the insights. That's the vision of investing that I have. That's the future of middle-class investing. I call it rational investing. It's not an approach where we form up into enemy camps, bulls versus bears. It's an approach that we use to learn about so many other subjects. I call it learning together. That's the phrase they used to have at Motley Fool. Learning together. That's what it should be about. So bulls are my friends. Bears are my friends. Anyone who helps me to achieve financial freedom sooner is my friend. The site is PassionSaving.com. Please look for future podcasts. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.